Coming up on this episode of the Creeper Cast, in observance of Thanksgiving, we look back on the year and give thanks to the films we've been able to see or cover. So put away that leftover cranberry sauce and spit out that turkey leg. It's time for Creeper Cast, episode 102. Give thanks to the horror movies of 2012.
This is Mike from Evolution of the Apocalypse, and there's only one place you guys need to go for your horror movies and news, and that's the Creeper Cast with Jason, Jeff, and Mike.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Creeper Cast. I'm Jason, and with me are two guys that seem to have way too much fun with a turkey baster. It's Jeff and Mike.
Have I told you about giving away my secrets?
What's wrong with liking to baste turkeys?
Nothing really wrong with it. I'm just saying you guys have too much.
I thought you were using euphemisms. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. That's
like to baste turkeys. Yeah. Yeah. That's it.
Which is a euphemism in and of itself. All right, to get a hold of us, give us a call, 503-454-6941. We want to hear from you and get your top five movies of the year. You can also email us at feedback@creepercast.com. Leave us a message on iTunes, and you can enter the Creepercast iTunes sweepstakes. Simply go to creepercast.com/iTunes or creepercast.com/TWDiTunes to enter. You leave a message or you leave a comment there, leave us some stars. You'll be put into the proverbial hat for the drawing once we hit 25 reviews. And if you win, you get your choice of anything out of the Creepercast swag store. That is any one thing. Two chances to enter, two chances to win. So head on over and leave us a message. Want to let you also know, we are now on Stitcher. So if you don't have Stitcher, get Stitcher. The Creepercast is on it. Stitcher is an award-winning provider of news and talk radio for your mobile phone. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. And now, The Creepercast and The Walking Dead Week in Review. And with that, this week we are going to talk about our top five movies of the year. And the way it was explained to me, it does not have to be top five movies that came out. They can also be the top five movies that we covered so far this year in 2012. And I don't know about you guys, but that's what I chose. I stuck to movies that we covered.
Okay. Which is fine, but I was hoping, too, that to make sure that they were ones maybe that you hadn't seen until this year, too.
Well, they were all ones that I hadn't seen until this year.
Okay, good.
So every one of these... Yeah, every one of these...
They didn't have to all be, but...
Yeah, what I'm saying is they're not, movies that I saw in the theaters or stuff. You know, I wanted to stick with some of the top five movies that we reviewed so far. Because we reviewed a lot of movies this year and a lot of great movies. So picking the top five was actually pretty difficult.
Really? We reviewed a lot of good movies?
Shut up, Mike.
No, that's good. That's good, though, because I went totally outside of that, and only a couple of the movies on my list are ones we've actually talked about so far, but they are movies that I continually have been talking about. So,
yeah, I think there's actually only one on my list that we reviewed. Everything else was something that I saw this year.
Mike, that's because you're like a dark cloud that walks around.
I love you too, Jason.
How was your turkey day?
It was very quiet. Thank you.
All right. So what do you say? You want to just get into it and start with our number fives?
Yeah. Well, does anybody have any honorable mentions?
I do, but I was going to leave
that
them.
I said honorable mentions were okay.
Yes, I have two honorable mentions.
Okay. You want to say that for last?
Yes.
Yeah, because I've got one that okay. I really wanted
well,
to
like.
Well, let's
start with number five.
I think I want to let everyone know that Jeff is coming into us via phone, so I'm going to assume that he's not quite hearing us talking.
Not really.
Yeah, I'm assuming that there's a little bit of a lag there. So we're going to have to just bear with that. Yeah, let's start with number five. My number five that I picked is actually Mike's first episode joining us, I think. And it was Panic in Year Zero, which is from 1962. Yeah. We covered it on episode 78. And it's about a family of four that leaves Los Angeles for a camping trip just before a nuclear bomb destroys the city. As Lawless prevails, the father must fight to keep his family alive. The reason I chose this is because, you know, there are so many true elements in this extremely campy film when it comes to apocalyptic survival, especially when you talk about the mental and look at it from a mental and social standpoint.
Ironically,
I can't disagree with that.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Go, Mike.
No, all I had to say is I can't disagree with that. It was actually.
Yeah, I actually enjoyed
it. I'm way lagging. Hey, what?
This is almost funny.
I actually enjoyed this, which I was kind of surprised that I was going to like it, you know, just because I'm not a huge buff of older movies. And it was, you know, like you said, I think it was my first show as a regular, you know, because I did do the one show with you guys. But and considering it wasn't, in my opinion, technically horror, but I still enjoyed it. I thought it was a good movie.
You know, and it's kind of weird seeing Frankie Avalon in that type of role, because you're so used to seeing him, you know, singing something like Beauty School Dropout or, you know, being down at the beach with the girl from the Mouseketeers.
Annette Funicello.
Yes, her. All right. And with that, Mike, why don't you go with your number four?
How about my number five?
Or your number five.
All right, my number five is actually one of the few Asylum movies that I didn't think completely sucked.
That's Mike giving it a thumbs up.
It was I'm sorry. I got a text message from Jeff, so that threw me off. It was Abraham Lincoln versus Zombies.
Ah, yes, yes. Mr. Bill Oberst Jr.
Exactly, and that's one of the reasons I really liked the movie. The movie itself was kind of dumb, had a problem with the zombies, you know, whatever. But Bill Oberst Jr. as Abraham Lincoln, and we discussed this when we talked with Bill, and we've mentioned it on the show a couple of times, not having actually ever heard Abraham Lincoln speak, his portrayal seemed spot on to me, you know, from just what I picture in my head. He had the voice, the resonance, that he had the character, the presence, everything about it. So, you know, the movie itself, not so great, but I had to pick it because, you know, it introduced me to Bill, and I think it's a, you know, if nothing else, it's a fun thing to watch on a Saturday night if you got nothing else to do.
Yeah, that's a great rainy day movie. What I like is that's a part of the Asylum's Mockbuster series, where they basically take whatever is really big in the theaters at the time. And at that time, it was Abraham Lincoln versus Vampires, or Abraham Lincoln Vampire Slayer. And they make their own version of it. Or a similar version. In this case, they went with zombies. So I like it. And there's a Switch psych.
Yeah, that I would. Yeah. I really wish Bill could hook me up with that. I would put that on my mantle if I had a mantle.
I would build a mantle to put that on.
Exactly.
All right.
Well, my number five. My number five is the most hated movie by Mike that I think we've probably done this year. And it is Rubber. And it is Rubber, because I think as far as brilliantly bad movies go, Rubber rates highest on my list, especially this year. Now, I would say that Thanksgiving 3 comes really close to one of the worst movies I've seen this year. But it's not quite as good as Rubber turned out to be. I mean, I thought Rubber was interesting because you had that, you know, Jason's always talking about voyeurism in horror films. Rubber was one of those that was chock full of it. It was the insanity idea of a tire waking up in the middle of the desert and running around killing people with telekinesis.
Mind bullets.
It was just a mind bullets. It was just such a well put together and extreme film that it made my number five list.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I loved Rubber simply for the avant-garde nature of it.
Now, yeah. See, you said, you know, this was my most hated movie of the year, and that's not true at all. If you remember, I had nothing. I didn't have, you know, I didn't say it that's sucked. True. I didn't say it was great. I was like, I was stunned. I still, to this day.
Still don't know what you watched.
Yeah. Speaking of Thanksgiving 3, as I mentioned to Jason, and I messaged Jeff last night, I said, after 5 minutes, you can make me watch Rubber again. You can make me, you know, watch. You guys could fire me, but there was no way after 5 minutes I was watching any more of that movie.
I don't blame you. I got 20 minutes into it.
You're a better man than I.
I watched the first one last year because Jeff had us. And when I saw it pop up, and I'm like, I'm not watching this one, no.
It's not even the horribly awesome bad that I said that the original Thanksgiving was. I mean, there is nothing about this movie that I found entertaining, other than the fact that the idea that I liked the idea that the turkey was running around trying to find the last copy of Thanksgiving 2.
Because so they're making fun of themselves. I like it.
Yeah, honestly, that's the part that I liked the most.
Honestly, even the boobs at the very beginning didn't. I was like, that's just. I mean, because you know me.
And Wanda?
Show me boobs and I'm happy. You know, I mean, but this
and
was
it
like.
Right up.
I'm just like, those aren't even attractive boobs.
All right. Let's go on.
Okay. On to my number four, which is 2009's Orphan, which we covered in episode 76. And if you want to hear any of these, you can go back and type in Creepercast 76 and it'll take you to that episode. Or for my previous one, Creepercast 78, and it'll take you to that one. But Orphan is about a husband and wife who recently lost their baby and adopt a 9-year-old girl who is not nearly as innocent as she claims to be. All right, spoiler alert. If you have not seen this movie, skip ahead about 30 seconds, because I'm about to give away the ending. I will wait. Okay, the reason I like this movie is because Isabella Furman is a really creepy 11-year-old playing a 30-year-old pretending to be a 9-year-old. And that was the coolest twist I've seen in a long time.
And is anybody confused yet?
I was going to say, that was really convoluted.
I would agree that Orphan was actually a very creepy movie, especially from that standpoint. I mean, because you're trying to figure out, okay, what is it about this kid? And you're immediately thinking possession. And then when it turns out to be that, you're just like, wait a minute.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and... like I say, you know, just an amazing ensemble cast, and Isabella Furman, she did amazing. I couldn't have asked for much more, especially from, you know, a child actress.
All right. I haven't seen it,
so I can't really make any comments on it.
And now I gave away the ending for you.
Thanks.
Except that he's really confused. That's all he can say now.
And now I don't have to watch it.
Aren't you glad you joined the show?
Thanks.
Yeah, at this point, halfway through the year. All right, Mike, what's your number four?
My number four, actually, ironically, I'm sticking with the Abraham Lincoln theme. I went ahead and rented Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter, partially because I had read the book by Graham Seth Smith, I think is his name off the top of my head. I really kind of enjoyed, again, the portrayal. If you haven't seen the movie, most of it takes place with a younger Abraham Lincoln. As his family or his mother is killed by vampires, and that sets him on the path to become. Well, he actually meets a second vampire who has. There's a warring faction. You know, some of them want to rule humans, and some of them, you know, think, oh, we can't do that. And so he's recruited. And there's a little twist in this movie, which I had never seen before. Spoiler alert, spoiler, spoiler, spoiler. Vampires cannot kill each other. They can't harm each other in any way, shape, or form. This is why Abraham Lincoln is recruited, because this vampire wants to kill other vampires, but he can't do it himself. And he gets to a certain point in his life where he realizes just killing vampires isn't enough, and that's how he starts on his political career. He finds out that the vampires are using the fact that Americans own slaves to as a feeding ground, and in order to save humans and save lives, that we come up with the Emancipation Proclamation. There's a lot of good action scenes in this movie. There's some bad parts, but you know, overall, it's not a terrible movie. I don't think it was the blockbuster that they were hoping for, but so far, it's the only one out of this. And I'm not even sure what the genre should be called, where they're basically taking classics and throwing monsters in with
Pride and Prejudice and zombie kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because there are several of these books out now, but this is the only one that's been made into a film thus far. So, anyways, yeah, that's my number four, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. Give it a shot.
I haven't seen it yet, but I actually do plan on it just because, you know, it looks like a fun movie. So
yeah, it's thought-provoking.
It is actually a fun movie in that. Oh, crap. I'm lagging again. It is actually a really fun movie. And what I like the extra twists. Like, you find out that the whole reason for the Civil War was actually the vampires were pretty much, getting the South to do it kind of thing. And then that extra twist at the end is really good. So it's a fun movie, definitely.
Okay, your number four, Jeff?
My number four has already been talked about. It's Abraham Lincoln versus Zombies from 2012. And for me, this is just an excuse to get Bill Bush Jr., Abraham Lincoln, and Zombies on the list. All in one. And I consider it, lucky. And I consider it lucky if I only need one movie to get all three of them on my number five list. But, again, as Mike said, it introduced us to, Bill Bush Jr., who we are now big fans of. And, we've had him on the show already, and we'll hopefully have them on the show again. In fact, just to throw this one out there, we have been asked to review and kind of this new thing that we're going to start doing, which is every month I want us to put together like an independent review show where we'll spend 20 minutes talking about a film that's been sent to us by independent filmmakers. And the current one that we're going to be working on in the next month is The Devil Within, which was originally released in 2010, starring Bill Oberst as one of the main characters. And the writer-director contacted us, and basically from what I understand, this is a completely and totally different movie.
Yeah, it was re-edited change everything, yeah.
And I'm really curious about that, and I'm looking forward to us talking about that in the next few weeks. And from what I understand, we're going to be able to get stars from the show. Maybe we'll even, I'm sure Bill will be more than happy to come back. And we'll also get the writer-director himself as well. And that is my plug for Bill Oberst Jr. and a future show of ours.
All right. On to my number three, which is Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer from 1986, which we talked about in episode 73, when we talked about, you know, all the psychos. It's based on the true life of serial killer Henry Lee Lucas. I really enjoyed it for its grittiness, almost hyper-reality feel of it. It was very, very highly disturbing. And it also starred The Walking Dead's Michael Rooker.
Yeah, Merle.
Merle.
A very young Merle, by the way.
Yeah, but he's...
Now we know why he's so messed up.
I know, I've seen the cover art for that movie, and again, I haven't seen it, but he's one of those actors that he just doesn't seem to, you know, age too much. You know, he looks pretty much the same.
Yeah, you know, for this being, you know, almost, what, 30 years ago, he doesn't look too much different than he did back in the 1980s.
That's all I really got.
A lot less hair.
Yeah. And now one less hand.
Yeah. Poor Michael.
Mike, what's your number three?
My number three is the only official remake that I have liked recently. It is Fright Night, the remake of the 1980s. Cult classic starring Chris Sarandon, Roddy McDowall, and whoever that punk kid was. But the remake obviously stars Colin Farrell as the vampire. We have Anton is it Yelchin, who played young Scotty in the Star Trek reboot. And I can never remember the kid's name. I just know him as McLovin, as the character of Evil Ed. And I like this movie, and you guys know this, and we've talked about this. I am not a huge fan of remakes. In fact, if you go through my Facebook feed, you'll always see me complaining about the newest reboot.
Yeah, what's the latest one now?
Beverly Hills Cop. Just read that in Entertainment Weekly today. They are rebooting Beverly Hills Cop.
Okay.
Which, you know, my official position is I am officially done with Hollywood at this point.
But back to Fright Night. You did like that as far as a remake.
I did. It's some elements of the original. The character dynamics I thought were really well done. Colin Farrell as Jerry Dandridge, the vampire, I just thought he had that evil sexiness that, you know, just really played well. And if, I forgot the most important character, the character of Peter Vincent, played by David Tennant, as we all know, the 10th Doctor. There's, you know, some scares. There's a lot of laughs. It's a fun movie. I really just think people didn't give it a real chance just because, one, if they knew it was a remake, they didn't want to see, you know, they didn't want to taint their memory. Because the original Fright Night was awesome. It's one of my all-time favorite movies. And this, while not nearly, it's not as good, it's still fairly well done, and I enjoyed it, so... Fright Night.
All right.
I've seen it too because I'm one of those that wants to give as much love as I can to films that are shot in New Mexico.
Oh, yeah.
And that was shot here. So I watched it because actually I sold the furniture for, or no, not that one, that not that film. Never mind. I'm confused right now. Oh,
I was going to say,
with Fright Night.
Go ahead.
Well, no, parts of it was shot here. That's right, because it's Anton Yelchin was actually here for, because they were shooting Odd Thomas here. So that's why I was getting confused.
That's right, he's in Odd Thomas.
Right, he plays Odd. But, I kind of liked it, especially I liked David Tennant, of course. But at the same time, there was a lot of things about it that you know, irritated the crap out of me, like the overuse of CGI. I didn't buy Colin Farrell.
Really?
Although, I thought he was really good at being evil. He was really good at being bad, but
no, of course.
And it was it's another one of those fun movies.
Yeah. Again, it's not going to win any awards, but it's fun to watch. And of course, I like the fact that, and I forgot to mention this originally, they actually brought Chris Sarandon in for a cameo. He played Jerry Dandridge in the original, which for me was what made the movie. So it was nice. It's one of those interconnectivity things that we've talked about that, you know, if you hadn't seen the original, you wouldn't get it. But because I have seen the original, seeing him in the movie was cool to me.
All right. On to my number two.
Hey, I didn't give a number three.
Oh, we're skipping you. Okay, go on to Jeff's number three.
And we're still on three. On to Jeff's number three. No, this is actually a good one for me because everybody's heard me complain constantly about found footage films. And believe it or not, a couple of them made it on my list today, which is unusual for me. And I actually just saw this one probably 3 weeks ago. And I'm talking about Grave Encounters from 2011. It's directed by the Vicious Brothers, who are, you know, amongst the, you know, the big directors now that are supposed to be huge in found footage. And I think a lot of the reason why I like this film, I mean, it's starring a lot of, you know, a bunch of nobodies. But a lot of the reason why I like this film is because it's basically when ghost hunting goes bad. So this crew goes to let me actually bring up the synopsis because it's better than me saying basically an ah all the time. for the ghost hunting reality show, a production crew locks themselves inside an abandoned mental hospital that's supposedly haunted, and it might prove to be all too true. And this movie, I mean, I guess the reason why I liked it so much is that they didn't rely so much on the camera, you know, the camera blackout tricks and the glitch tricks and things like that. And some of the ghostly presences really were legitimately creepy at the moment they happened. I mean, I think that like half this movie, you can expect things to, you know what to expect. The other half of the movie, and it's about halfway through the movie because the first half of the movie, when things that you expect happen, you know, it's because they're creating it. The other half of the movie, when the things you don't expect to happen is not, you know, it's the ghosts and stuff doing it. And there were some legitimately creepy moments in there. They also did reverse techniques as well. Like one of the favorite ones for found footage films is somebody gets pulled down a hallway by a specter. In this film, you had a guy getting thrown at the camera. it had some really good stuff. Now, my only problem with this particular movie, Andrea, is that they did make a sequel, and from what I understand, they went for full on Blair Witch 2 bullcrap. So as much as I'm willing to say to tell everybody that you should see Grave Encounters, because for found footage, it probably established itself better because it's using a lot of the same techniques without overusing them and making them, you know, too cliche. And if they are cliche, it's on purpose. Don't watch Grave Encounters 2, because just the fact that I know what Grave Encounters 2 is about makes me dislike the original a little bit.
Retroactively disliking it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I don't know what to say about that. I haven't actually seen it, so
I'd never heard of it until just now. So
that's actually the funny thing about it too, is that it came so under the radar, and that's another problem with the second one is that they take themselves so seriously. Is that it's kind of like, you know, in Human Centipede, in the first, you know, you have the first movie, and then the second movie was all done because of the first movie.
Yes.
You know, because of somebody who was a fan of the first film. Well, that's basically Grave Encounters 2 is supposed to be like a bunch of college students who are fans of the original movie go to inspect everything and find out if any of it was really true. The only problem is that they're making it sound like that the original movie is like super fantastic and everybody has seen it, but nobody's even seen the first, you know, very few people have actually seen the first Grave Encounters. So it's like they were too full of themselves when they made the second one.
All right. And with that, I'm going to head on to my number two, which is from episode 62, when we talked about, you know, all things lovey-dovey for Valentine's Day. And we went with Zombie Honeymoon 2004. Now,
wow.
Zombie Honeymoon is a gore-soaked exploration of how far the boundaries of true love can be pushed without reaching a breaking point. It's a really fun look at your loved one turning into a zombie and what you're willing to do for him. Yeah, exactly. And so, and the thing is it's one of them movies that you're kind of like, well, yeah, but it's a zombie and, you know, he ate your mom and, you know, all this stuff. And you're like, yeah, but you know what? Maybe I'd let that go too. So,
yeah.
That is weird.
One of the reasons that's why I actually put it on the list is it's one of those that do make you go, yeah, I wonder what I would do in this situation kind of thing, because we all think we know.
Right. Yeah. You think, you know, somebody turns into a zombie, I'm putting them down. Or like, you know, we all bastardize the governor on The Walking Dead because he's got a zombie daughter that he refuses to kill. Well, you know what? Could you really put down a family member?
In a damn heartbeat.
Yeah, but you hate your family members.
Or would you do a Shaun of the Dead? Or would you do a Shaun of the Dead and chain your best friend in a shed and go play video games with him?
I would maybe do that for a while.
Yeah, you know, it could be fun for a little while.
You know, but yeah, you know, even so, it's interesting. I like how Zombie Honeymoon played out.
Awesome.
Alrighty then. My number two is my only prequel movie. It is 2011's The Thing. And Jason's going to know where I'm coming from on this.
Yes.
I had been waiting 30 some years for this movie. As much as I love John Carpenter's The Thing, which is a remake of The Thing from Another World, which is based on a short story called Who Goes There? There's your little trivia for the day.
Which nobody could hear because Jeff was coughing.
So, anyways, there has been talk of this movie for literally 30 years, you know, since the original came out, because it was such an ambiguous ending. And so when I had heard that they were going to do a prequel / sequel, it was one of those things that you're just like, is it going to work? How are they going to do this? Because a sequel, you know, how do you bring Kurt Russell back 30 years later and explain the age difference if the movie takes place immediately afterwards? A prequel, we kind of got that information in the original Thing. You know, it came from the Norwegian camp and what have you. But what they did is they actually gave us a full story about the crash, the Norwegian team finding the thing in the ice. I believe they even used some of the same location shooting. There was a couple of problems, and it's just little things that I noticed. Like if you watch the original 1982 The Thing, I think it was 82, they show a scene and basically the ship is completely uncovered in the ice. Well, by the end of the movie, this prequel, The Thing, it's still buried in the ice. So there's a little bit of discontinuity in a couple of the scenes. Obviously, the main character is female, and my understanding, the reason they did that was because they didn't want people to compare her character with Kurt Russell's character of MacReady. It's the CGI, the effects, honestly, considering it's 30 years later, aren't that much better than what they did, you know, in 1982. And unfortunately, I swear they took a couple of shots and reused them with the different actors. I think it's a valiant effort. I think they did it really well. I enjoyed it. And just because, like I said, I've been waiting 30 years for it. And unlike my honorable mention that's going to be coming up, they didn't screw the pooch on this.
Your honorable mention screwed the pooch, though. Okay.
Yes.
I saw The Thing in the theater. I actually wasn't that, you know, happy with it. I mean, when you first said that – that that you know, you'd be able to see, like, you were asking questions like how are they going to bring Kurt Russell back into this, and my answer is make him female. which you pretty much covered. You know, it was an interesting movie, but I don't think we needed it. I guess that was my main thing, is there was just so much about it that just seemed like they just tried to find ways to reinvent the original.
Right, and that's but, some of the complaint is that, you know, the shots are, you know, literally taken from the original. And that's it made my number two because I liked it because I am just a huge fan of the original. And like I said, I've been waiting 30 years for this. And if they had done...
Well, they better not have let you down.
You know, with the 30-year wait. And like I said, there was... You're right. We didn't need this because we already basically knew what happened in the Norwegian camp. But it could have been a whole lot worse.
Hey, that much is true.
So, I mean, you know, yeah, we didn't need it, but I'm glad they made it. And, you know, if they were to do it at this point, there's no way they can feasibly do a sequel, which, you know.
Right.
The only way I actually had read somewhere that they were talking about doing a sequel and explaining the age or the difference in appearance in Kurt Russell's character would be they were going to blame it on like frostbite or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, yeah, I'm not sure about that.
Jason, comment on the thing, the prequel to The Thing.
Well, I mean, I haven't watched it, but my thought about it was that I was kind of in agreement with you, is that there really didn't need to be a prequel because we got most all of the information we needed to know in the original. So, I mean, if it turned out great, you know, I'm happy for them, and I'm happy that Mike enjoyed it, you know, and I'm sure I'll see it and, you know, enjoy it myself. But it was one of them, not necessarily a movie that I think needed to be made.
Well, we are talking about Hollywood, right. you know, obviously rebooting
a lot of movies
Beverly
that don't
Hills
need
to be
Cop. All right, my number two. People have heard me talk about this forever, and yet nobody, for at least the last couple of months, and nobody wants to go see it for some reason. Maybe it's because it's not in theaters anymore. I don't know. My number two was directed by Scott Derrickson. You may remember him as the guy from The Exorcism of Emily Rose. He did The Day the Earth Stood Still and Hellraiser Inferno, which I don't know why I mentioned that one. But the film I am talking about is, of course, Sinister, starring Ethan Hawke. Which was actually, I mean, I very much enjoyed this movie. I'll give you a quick, it's a true crime writer finds a cache of 8mm snuff films that suggest the murder he is currently researching is the work of a serial killer whose career dates back to the 1960s. I just want to say that when this one goes on the supernatural route, which it pretty much has to, they do such a great job putting this film together. And I know I've made like many comments about one of the things I like about this is that, you know, for a while there, they kept making comments, you know, when this movie was being billed, they kind of made comments about found footage film. And what they were drawing attention to was the fact that he found footage film, you know,
he found found footage.
Film. Yeah. And of course you get to see these things. But what I loved about the film is that the way the normal screenshots were done was actually a lot of it was found footage style, but it was done with pure cinematic, you know, with the pure cinematic eye. So there wasn't the glitches and everything like that, but you had the camera follows. And I mean, you had the cameras that were like in the face up high. And then you had the ones that followed the characters, especially Ethan Hawke's character, which by the way, if you guys tell me that you don't think Ethan Hawke's one of the better actors we have out there these days, this movie could prove you wrong because he was actually very good in this one as well. And you know, it's pretty much it's a fun film, and it has some legitimate creepy moments. It steals from found footage style without going into glitches and crap like that.
All right, I'm sure I'll see it when it comes out on DVD.
And honestly, I don't know that much about Ethan Hawke to say one way or the other whether or not I like him. So
seems okay to me. My number one is, and I am actually ashamed that it took me this long to see it, was from episode 90, and it would be Stephen King's The Mist from 2007, where storm unleashes a species of bloodthirsty creatures on a small town, where a small band of citizens hole up in a supermarket and fight for their lives. Yeah, like I say, it's from 2007, and for some reason it was one of them that kept slipping me. I knew about it. I knew I needed to watch it. I just didn't have a chance to. And thankfully, Jeff, you put it on the list, which forced me to sit down and actually watch it. And it has got to be one of my favorite horror films, if not just general films out there. It was written and directed by Frank Darabont, who we all know from The Walking Dead, and stars quite a few Walking Dead alums. We have Laurie Holden, Jeffrey DeMunn, and Melissa McBride. There's also a lot of other faces in this film. This is like basically they just took, you know, everybody that you've seen on TV all over and thrown them together with Andre Brower, Toby Jones, William Sadler, and Sam Witwer. The other things that I liked about this, the three types of tension they really played on. You had the external with all the creatures from the mist. You had a lot of social, which I'd say probably about 70% of the movie was actually more social horror in what the group of people in the store are doing to each other. But then you also had the internal struggles with Thomas Jane's character, David, trying to come to grips with what is happening around him, especially at the end. The creepiest part of the movie is the spiders when they're in the other building and there's all the spiders around. Personally, I hate spiders, and it physically creeped me out, which is a really hard thing to do. And like I said, it had one of the most amazing and probably heart-wrenching endings in film history.
Which makes it one of those love-hate situations, which that ending especially makes it one of those love-hate situations. And I just want to point out really quickly that by watching The Mist, though, you also get an idea, because I missed the show where you guys got to talk about The Mist. And at least I think I did. Maybe I wasn't there mentally. Anyway, it was one of the things I love about it, too, though, is that when you take it into comparison with the first season of The Walking Dead, a lot of the same cinematic style, a lot of the same storytelling, and you know, the building of the, you know, the three different types of tension that you were talking about is what he put into the first season of The Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah.
Which makes it that much more interesting as a film.
Oh yeah, now, definitely.
I love this movie simply because it's Stephen King. And, you know, obviously I put up extra content on our website comparing the movie and the book. Or the novella, I should say. It's a short story. Well, not very short, but and it's by far the best adaptation of a King horror novel that I've ever seen. We've seen good movies that based on his stories, like The Shawshank Redemption, The Green Mile, but unfortunately, a lot of his horror movies do not translate very well to the big screen because there's feelings described that just don't carry over. And I just think it was incredibly well done. Very close to the short story. I actually, if I had given it more thought, this probably would have been on my list as well.
All right. Speaking of your list, Mike, what's your number one?
This is going to come to come as a surprise to pretty much no one. My number one of the year is the 2012 movie Cabin in the Woods, directed by God Joss Whedon. All hail Joss.
And I know for at least two of us, this is a mutual love fest because I've just given away my number one as well.
Couple of things about this movie. And when I first heard about it, I was actually, for some reason, thinking it was a reboot of Sam Raimi's, you know, original concept for The Evil Dead. Don't ask me why. And then I had a problem. The title itself lent me to the idea that it was simply going to be something that we had already seen before. Cabin in the Woods, we've seen, you know, countless slasher films, Friday the 13th, you know. Okay, we've seen it. We've been there, done that. Now, granted, it was still Joss Whedon, so I was like, okay, I'm going to give it a shot. Now, I didn't get a chance to go see it in the theater, but as soon as it came out on DVD, I picked it up at a Blockbuster, came home, watched it. Literally the very next day, I went out and bought this movie. Yes, it does have the slasher Cabin in the Woods stuff, but it's got such a twist on it. It's got extra things going on that I had never seen before, and I thought it was very well put together. The cast of characters, Chris Hemsworth as you know, our beloved Thor from the Avengers and Thor movies, before he was Thor, by the way. And that was another thing that I wanted to point out. This movie actually was made like 3 years ago, but it's been sitting on the shelf. And I'm not even sure why. I don't know if Jeff's got more information on that, but the fact that, and that kind of almost put me off it too. You know, it's like, well, if it's been sitting on a shelf for 3 years, maybe it's not that good. And anyways, I mean, just overall, I love this movie. I just watched it again last night, so I had a couple of things to point out. And I actually wrote, there are exactly two things that could have made this movie better, and two things only, in my opinion. More boobs.
And Buffy.
Okay, so three things. But the other thing that could have made this – well, maybe not even the movie itself, but they could have done it because they did it with the movie Clue. Give us alternate endings. Give us alternate timelines. Because if you've seen the movie, spoiler alert, give me a few seconds.
Let me take my headphones off because I haven't heard it yet or seen it yet.
Well, this isn't – it doesn't give away the ending. Anyways, the fact of the matter is, you know, they choose an item from the basement – which unleashes the zombies that are sent to kill them. And as we see in that scene building up to that, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of options, including a conch shell, in what has to be an homage to Clive Barker's Hellraiser. There's a what's clearly his take on a Cenobite in the puzzle box. If they could have given me alternate views of if one of those other items had been picked, either in the movie, you know, like I said, as an alternate ending or as a bonus reel on the Blu-ray, I probably would have just creamed my jeans.
All right, Jeff, why'd you choose?
I love Mike's ideas about this. Yeah, I hadn't considered the alternate ending type thing. Because but I like his idea with that, because there are so many different directions the film could have gone based on, you know, what they had picked, in air quotes. let's see. The reason why I put it on the top of my list is, first of all, again, like Mike, this is one of those rare moments when Mike and I are in almost total agreement.
Savor this, people. This will never happen again.
And I knew this was going to happen when Mike and I were talking about how this list was going to work out. And I was going to go, well, I know at least one of our films are probably going to be in the same spot. And this was the one that I knew was going to make it, because Mike and I were texting back and forth after he had seen Cabin in the Woods. And I had gotten a hold of it in another way and started watching it. And it was a really bad version that I had. So Loves, as everybody knows from The Walking Dead Week in Review, went out and grabbed the Blu-ray so we could finish watching it, just so we could finish watching it. And of course, we started at the beginning and went all the way to the end. And afterwards, I was just like, oh my God, this movie was so freaking awesome, because you basically take every stereotype you ever know in a film and then add Joss Whedon's twist to it, and you have a brilliant movie. The only things that I thought that was lacking, and the more I think about it, though, the more I'm okay with it, is the acting was really subpar. But then, so is the acting in most Cabin in the Woods type movies. like Mike, I put it off for quite a while because of the fact that it was, well, for me, it was the ensemble cast at first is really what threw me. Was, you know, when I saw Thor was going to be in it, I'm like, come on, he's only good as Thor. Everything else I've ever seen him in, you know, I would never give him a whole lot of credit for. In this movie, he played the meathead, and he did such a great job. And what happened to him was the first best scene in the movie.
Yeah, his death scene.
Like
was
after that, though. But after that, it was a case of like, you know, I mean, obviously I was drawn into this because it's Joss Whedon. The writing is pure Joss Whedon. It's everything that anybody who's a fan of Joss Whedon would expect. So the trivia part of it that Mike brought up was like, why did it take 3 years for this to get out there? Well, there was a lot of reasons. For one, he didn't direct it. Joss didn't have anything to do with the directing of it, and which is really kind of tenuous at best, because what he would do is that he would make the director send him the dailies every day, and then send him notes saying what he did wrong. But Joss was, you know, what it was a two writer team, and originally Joss was supposed to just executive produce it. But as soon as Joss saw what the film was about, he insisted on being involved in the writing process and basically rewrote half the movie. So we can thank him for the fact that it turned out that great. And that's the reason why I was really kind of like, I don't know if it's going to be that great. Just because there's a name attached to it doesn't mean it's going to be fantastic. The fact that he was the guy who walked in and said, wait a minute, if I'm attaching my name to this, it's going to be good, is what made the movie for me as well. And the reason why I sat on the shelf for 3 years was because of the Avengers, because they didn't have the money and they couldn't convince the film, you know, their distributors to release it. They shelved it until he finished the Avengers. And then he basically forced the distributor to put it out by adding money to it. So it was one of those weird relationships that actually came up with a really good movie that has the best things that you would expect and some interesting twists on everything that we've ever known about horror films.
Yeah, and I, aside from what I already mentioned as, you know, a couple slight problems, the one thing that really stuck out, the two things that really stuck out was the one guy, again, to me was, you know, it was like he was channeling, you know, Shaggy from Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
And maybe that was the point. You know, because of each character was stereotypical, you know, the scholar, right. the athlete, the fool. So, you know, perhaps that was a point. But the other thing that as I'm watching this movie, and Jason, if you want to, you know, tune out for a second.
The headphones off.
With the fact that, you know, we have this group controlling to an extent what is going on, and they have this obviously cube-like holding facility for all of these creatures. Why is there an option at all to let all of these creatures out? Why was that button there?
Why is there an anti-panic button? Which is basically what it is. It's an anti-panic button. It's the one that, hey, we're not panicked, so let's have a reason to panic.
I was just like, because like I noticed it, I guess, the first time I watched the movie. But again, when I was watching it last night, you know, and I was just coming up with notes, you know, to talk about while we were, you know, discussing the films and stuff. I was just like, to me, that was the most, because this is clearly a very sophisticated, powerful group, you know, interconnected. Yeah. All over the world to make sure this happens, you know, in some way, shape, or form. And they clearly have the technology and, you know, not just technology, but I'm assuming science and magic.
The knowledge, at least, yeah.
Yeah, to not only control these creatures, but hold them in these holding cells. Why do you need a button to let them all out at once? You know, that's like the, you know, the exhaust port on the Death Star. Who came up with that? And if it weren't for the fact that, you know, if it weren't for the fact that, you know, pretty much everybody dies, you know, when they rebuild
including
that guy need to be, you know, if he weren't already dead, he needs to be fired.
Is Jason back yet?
Yes, Jason.
I just want to tell you. I just want to tell you before you see Cabin in the Woods. Since we, you know, all spoilers are removed. I just have a teaser for you. It had to be a merman.
Okay.
Okay. All right, Jason. Let's hear your number one for the year in CreeperCast.
I already did.
Oh, you did, didn't you?
Yes, but I am going to give you my honorable mentions.
We got honorable mentions now, though. That's
yes,
great.
And real quick,
the ones that didn't quite make the list.
Yeah, and the two that I'm going to give both of mine at the same time because we're running out of time because you guys talk forever. Right. Obviously, you guys like Cabin in the Woods. I'm going to assume you like Cabin in the Woods.
I'm going to assume you're going to watch it.
Yeah, I am going to watch it. I will.
Okay.
It's actually on my Netflix queue. That's why I haven't rented it yet. I have this problem where I'm behind on everything because I put it in my queue on Netflix. My two honorable mentions, my number one is going to be Alice Cooper's Monster Dog, which we reviewed in episode 61. And the main reason that I put that as an honorable mention is because that is a movie that I have heard about for years, but never had a chance to see. And my honorable mention number two is not a movie at all, but it's actually Take This Lollipop, which starred Bill Oberst Jr., and it is an amazing, creepy, online interactive thing that that everybody that I've shown this to has either pushed the computer away or went, "Oh crap, that is the coolest thing I've ever seen."
Yeah, that and actually.
And 90% of them hate you now.
Yes.
90% of them won't talk to Jason anymore.
No, what's great about it is it's like going viral, you know. It's like you know, you can't just keep it to yourself. You have to show the next person. So I actually get messages from people that are like five times removed from me of showing it and saying, "I hate you for showing this to this person, to this person, to this person, to me."
Who had to show it to this person, who had to show it to this person, that ended up to me, and now I'm worried that Bill Oberst Jr. is going to show up at my step.
Yes.
I have to congratulate you on both those choices, because I never would have expected Monster Dog to make a list of any sort, because it doesn't make most lists.
Like I say, you know, it's mainly because I've known about it for years, and I haven't had a chance to see it, and now I have, so.
Okay, and then of course, Take This Lollipop. I mean, I really think we all should just change our honorable mentions to Take This Lollipop. But instead, I'm sure we'll go on.
All right. Well, my one honorable mention, and I'm going to do this real quick, is the 2012 film Ridley Scott's return to sci-fi horror, Prometheus. This is a movie that had so much potential. I mean, Scott had literally had 30 years to redo this movie, or not redo this movie, but to give us the sequel / prequel, whatever, to one of the greatest sci-fi horror movies of all time, obviously, Alien.
Yeah.
And he had 30 years to do this. It was a big thing about, you know, his return and is it a prequel to Alien? Is it not? And having watched the movie and read some of the reviews that, you know, yes, it takes place in the same universe as the Alien movies, and there are, and this is in air quotes, strands of DNA from the Alien movies. It's in and of itself, it is not a bad movie. However, the way he ties it to the Alien movies, for the most part, really lackluster. And considering he had 30 years to do this, he really did screw the pooch.
And I congratulate you for making it all the way through the movie.
I mean, like I said, in and of itself, it's not a terrible movie. But going into it, you know, it's like one of the – and I can't think of one off the top of my head. But, you know, The Vampire Lestat or Queen of the Dam.
Right.
That movie.
Or Jar Jar Binks.
If you go into Queen of the Dam, the movie, for a vampire movie, it doesn't suck. But if you go into Queen of the Damned expecting it to be the sequel to the vampire or Interview with the Vampire, based on Anne Rice's work, you are going to be sorely disappointed.
Because if you went in it that way, it made no sense at all.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Exactly. And that's exactly right, what happened to me.
All right, my honorable mentions are actually, I did say, yes, I did use the plural term, but thankfully they are both from the same movie, technically. And again, this is where I promised that I was going to go outside of my normal conventions and that you're actually going to find found footage films on my list, is I'm going to pick two short films from the entire ensemble known as VHS. Now, I do have a couple of problems with these. Like, there's no good reason for these two short films to be on VHS. But as a quick backstory, VHS is basically about a bunch of guys that break into a place looking for a specific VHS. That's your background story, your wraparound story. And then looking for a specific VHS, and then each tape has a little story and, you know, has a little film in the. So there's like six short films total to this hour and a half long movie. And I picked two of the short films as honorable mentions because I actually did enjoy the way they were put together. Now, the reason why I say that they weren't, the two that I picked are, I picked Amateur Night by director David Bruckner. Amateur Night was one of those, it's basically about a guy who puts a web camera into his glasses. And the whole goal for these guys is they're going out partying and their goal is to get a girl to go back to their hotel with them and sleep with all of them. What they end up with is this succubus. One of the things I love about the movie is that the way it's shot is actually one of those rare moments where you're actually seeing everything first person, because it was obviously done through, you know, like I said, through the guy's cameras or glasses. And so you didn't get as much of the dizzying display of things. And when you did get it, it was a good shock. The next one that I picked was called The Sixth Thing That Happened to Emily When She Was Younger, which is also another one of those movies that there's no good reason for it to end up on VHS, because like I said with the first one, if it was shot digitally, why would they dump it to VHS unless they work for the same TV station I do? But I didn't say that out loud, did I?
Yes, you did, and it's on record.
Oh, crap. Anyway, The Sixth Thing That Happened to Emily When She Was Younger is basically done through chat windows. You know, the video windows that we sometimes do when we're putting the show together, or if you want to go back to some earlier Creepercast episodes, you'll find some chat window idea. I think we just did the split screen. But this one basically was through chat windows. So everything that was happening either in the background or off the peripheral. And which made it interesting because you're watching these people talk and you're thinking this is boring because these people are talking. And then all of a sudden something happens behind them. And then the story goes nowhere near what you think it's going to go, because you're thinking that it's a ghost story and it turns into something else entirely, which I thought was kind of fun. And you can read everything that I had to say about VHS on our website at creepercast.com. I do have a complete review of all this stuff. And basically my only complaints with, you know, The Sixth Thing That Happened to Emily is that the direction it went was so far-fetched that, you know, I had a little bit of trouble with that. But that's my honorable mentions, is two of the short films from VHS.
All right. Not bad. I think that was a really good list that we had going on. We had a ton of different stuff between all of us.
Yeah, that worked out great. And Mike and I agreed. I mean,
yeah, like
whoever
you said, that's never
going to
happen again.
Never going to happen again.
So whoever had bets on this one, go collect and send us 10%.
All right. And I think with that, I think we should start the music. All right, remember to get a hold of us. Give us a call, 503-454-6941. We want to hear from you and what your top five movies are. You can also send us feedback at creepercast.com. You know where we really want to hear from you, though? Is on the Creepercast website, on the webpage of this episode, so that everybody else can hear what you think and what your top five movies of 2012 are that you are thankful for. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/creepercast and become a friend on Facebook and a cast member. at facebook.com/creepercast. Next week, we have They're Just Like Us, Only Different, with 1997's Mimic and 1995's Species. Mike, do you have a book next week?
I do, in fact. Next week's book is V Wars, by edited by and contributed to by Jonathan Mayberry, who you will hear more and more about as this show goes on, because I absolutely love everything the man has written.
All right, and don't forget to find us on Stitcher Smart Radio, where you can listen to The Creepercast or The Walking Dead Week in Review streamed straight to your smartphone. All right, thank you guys for joining me. See ya, Jeff and Mike.
See ya.